I accept your nomination for Vice President of the United States of America.
Those words made history. This is Friday, August 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, Hong Kong hits back at U.S. actions against it. China defends a huge pool party held in the city of Wuhan. Australia makes a deal with one possible manufacturer of a COVID-19 vaccine. And some help for struggling Chinatown restaurants in New York City. Gun violence, climate change, and COVID-19. Issues highlighted on night 3 of the Democratic National Convention Wednesday, when Senator Kamala Harris of California accepted the vice presidential nomination as running mate to candidate Joe Biden. Michael Sullivan reports viewers heard a litany of complaints against Republican President Donald Trump, all conveyed through a virtual format.
An event held remotely because of the pandemic, featuring Democratic Party luminaries and supporters around the United States. It is an unconventional convention, said host Kerry Washington, a Hollywood actress. And its highlight was unprecedented, the first black woman and South Asian American to run on a major party ticket.
I accept your nomination for Vice President of the United States of America.
Nominee Joe Biden was featured in video clips, supported, among others, by Gabby Giffords, a former member of Congress who nearly died in a gun attack.
America needs all of us to speak out, even when you have to fight to find the words.
Donald Trump was criticized for harsh enforcement of immigration laws and the treatment of asylum seekers and undocumented migrants. Former presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren criticized his handling of the coronavirus pandemic.
Today, America has the most COVID deaths in the world and an economic collapse. And both crises are falling hardest on black and brown families.
Former President Barack Obama said Trump does not respect the diversity of the country or the importance of his job.
I did hope, for the sake of our country, that Donald Trump might show some interest in taking the job seriously. That he might come to feel the weight of the office and discover some reverence for the democracy that had been placed in his care. But he never did.
The previous Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, stressed the importance of voting.
Remember back in 2016 when Trump asked, "What do you have to lose?" Well, now we know. Our health care, our jobs, our loved ones. The
climate crisis. Using social media for a nominating convention is experimental, but one media analyst says the format may be working.
Because I think some of the moments that might have seemed awkward or might have seemed like the picture was a little grainy, I think that's part of many of our lived experience now. And more to the point, is in fact how we are having relationships in some cases with coworkers, family members, people that we care about.
Reaching out to voters in a year of pandemic. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Apparently watching the Democratic National Convention from the White House, President Donald Trump sent out 3 tweets late Wednesday, all in caps, as he faced sharp criticism from the Democrats during the convention. 2 of his tweets were apparently directed toward former President Obama. In one of the tweets, Trump repeated a claim that Obama spied on the Trump campaign in 2016. While intelligence officials did monitor contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian oligarchs, there is no evidence available that Obama directed the intelligence community to spy on Trump. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. North Korea says it will unveil new economic plans in a January party meeting. New Zealand deploys troops to its borders to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Two dozen female Pakistani journalists complain that they have encountered coordinated, vicious social media campaigns to harass, discredit, and intimidate them for their work. Almost 30% of the population of India's capital of New Delhi likely have been infected by the novel coronavirus, says a new survey. Bangladesh is ready to hold trials of potential COVID-19 vaccines developed by India and will receive early supplies of any successful candidate. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. The U.S. State Department says it notified Hong Kong Wednesday that Washington has suspended or terminated three bilateral agreements with the semi-autonomous city following China's imposition of a sweeping national security law. Lauren Anthony reports.
The United States has suspended or terminated three bilateral agreements with Hong Kong that deal with criminal issues, such as extradition of fugitives. The State Department says it's a response to China's implementation of its sweeping new national security law in Hong Kong and follows similar moves from Australia, Canada, and the UK. Hong Kong immediately reciprocated to the US, suspending an agreement on mutual legal assistance. It calls the U.S. decision a disrespect for bilateralism and multilateralism under the current administration. The decision also follows President Donald Trump's order last month to end Hong Kong's special status under U.S. law, to punish China for what he called oppressive actions against the former British colony. He signed an executive order that he said would end the preferential economic treatment for the city. The Chinese security law punishes anything China considers secession, subversion, terrorism, or collusion with foreign forces, with up to life in prison. Beijing and the Hong Kong government have defended the law as necessary to restore order and preserve prosperity after months of at times violent anti-government protests last year.
That was Reuters' Lauren Anthony reporting. Meanwhile, lawmakers from Hong Kong's largest pro-democracy party say they plan to hold a debate over serving in the legislature another year or boycotting the extension of their terms. Their terms were extended because the government postponed elections for a year, citing the coronavirus outbreak. We continue on VOA Asia. The Chinese government said Thursday that a crowded pool party in the central city of Wuhan showed that the city had won a victory over coronavirus. Francis McGuire reports.
The Chinese government is defending images and photos that emerged of a crowded pool party in Wuhan this week, which went viral on social media. The Chinese city was, after all, where the global health crisis was first detected last year. But the amusement park that hosted the busy event was backed by the government on Thursday.
This shows that Wuhan's fight against the coronavirus has achieved a strategic victory.
State newspapers, China Daily and the Global Times also celebrated the event. They said the festivities showed life was back to normal in Wuhan. Strict lockdown measures earlier this year in the city and across China helped slow the health crisis. On Thursday, China reported its fourth straight day of zero locally transmitted infections.
Francis McGuire reporting. Happening now in Asia, Hong Kong publishers have been told to remove sensitive content from secondary school textbooks, according to local media. It's the latest move to tighten the city's academic freedoms after the passage of a new security law. Hong Kong's government said the edits would help students develop positive values. It denied any political censorship. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. International visitors to Australia may be required to have a vaccination against COVID-19 under government plans. Canberra says it has secured the rights to the Oxford University vaccine in the United Kingdom, which is thought to be one of the front runners in the global race to find an effective treatment. Phil Mercer has more from Sydney.
The Oxford University study is among a crowded international field of teams racing to develop a safe and effective coronavirus vaccine. Usually, scientific work of this complexity would take years, but research is being fast-tracked at unprecedented speed. Australia has signed a deal with British drug maker AstraZeneca to produce and distribute the Oxford vaccine if it works. All Australians would be offered doses, but a medical panel would determine a priority list of recipients, including health workers and the elderly. Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
We have signed a letter of intent with AstraZeneca, which will enable Australia to access, should it be successful, the vaccine for COVID-19 here in Australia, manufactured here in Australia, distributed free to 25 million Australians in the event that those trials prove successful.
Morrison backtracked after earlier suggesting vaccinations against the coronavirus could become mandatory for Australian citizens. However, government officials have said the vaccine could be compulsory for anyone travelling to Australia, if that was the advice from medical experts. Australia's borders are currently closed to foreign nationals. Paul Kelly, the nation's chief medical officer, believes uptake of any vaccine in Australia would be high.
The first will be a voluntary call for people, and I'm sure there will be long queues, socially distanced, of course, for this vaccine. It will be incredibly welcomed by many. It will be the absolute ticket to get back to some sort of normal society and the things that we all love and enjoy.
The aim is for 95% of the population to be inoculated, although experts doubt that figure could be achieved because of concerns in Australia about any new coronavirus drug and the speed at which it's been developed. Australia was also looking to sign deals with other vaccine developers. Human trials on a potential treatment have started at the University of Queensland. Experts there believe a vaccine will be available for emergency use by the middle of 2021. Officials in Canberra have said they were in discussions with Australia's neighbours, including Indonesia, Papua New Guinea and Fiji, about supplying a vaccine. Australia has recorded about 450 coronavirus deaths, most from an outbreak in the state of Victoria. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Media reports say a restaurant in central China has apologized to customers after public backlash from its controversial new rule set to reduce food waste by weighing patrons as they come in. All of the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. New York City's Chinatown neighborhood is struggling to get back on its feet as New York City reopens. Now, thanks to an outdoor dining project, restaurants in the neighborhood are gradually getting their customers back. VOA's video journalist Zhu Dao reports in this piece narrated by Lin Yang.
Rosita Lee has been running the Noodle Village in New York City's Chinatown for 13 years. In March, she closed her restaurant for 3 months due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, even as her business reopens, a permanent shutdown has been lingering on her mind.
I really thought about closing my restaurant in June when we just reopened. It was really difficult.
According to the Chinatown Business Improvement District, only 100 out of roughly 300 restaurants in New York City's Chinatown are now open for business.
New York has lost a lot of tourists, 67 million annually to be exact. In the past, there were also 300,000 people who worked in the offices nearby.
Yet a new project is gradually bringing life back to one of the oldest Chinatown in the country. Dine Out NYC, a pro bono effort by the architectural firm Rockwell Group, has put up new dining installations on the very last stretch of Mott Street. The closed-off outdoor seating can hold up to 120 people and offers open-air, socially distanced dining options to Chinatown's diners. to the restaurant owners is completely free.
This is the first good news in so many months of hardship. It's a morale booster.
Multiple restaurants on the strip are benefiting from the facilities as diners start to come in to enjoy a bowl of wonton soup or try the famous Peking duck. Jin Lim, who opened up her cheese tart shop in June, said the installation has brought in a decent amount of business.
This is like a food court. After this, I think there's a lot of people walking around. When they buy from there, they will always come here and try one or two.
Yet Rosita Lee said there are limitations. Since the pandemic never really went away, her restaurant, which can hold up to 50 people, can only serve 18 right now. She said she's taking a wait-and-see attitude.
I hope it will get better. I've been doing this for more than a decade, and my employees are great. So as long as the loss is bearable, I want to continue running my restaurant.
A citywide shutdown, an ongoing pandemic, discrimination against Chinese, and the Black Lives Matter protests all contribute in a decline of foot traffic to the area. Chen said New York City's Chinatown has a record of being able to get back on its feet. Lin Yang for Jiu Dao, VOA News, New York.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
This is VOA Asia. The pandemic is driving many Americans to voting by mail in this November's presidential election. However, congressional Democrats say the Trump administration's recent changes at the U.S. Postal Service could lead to voter suppression. VOA's Lori London gets details from congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson.
All of this really started when a new postmaster general came in earlier this summer, appointed by President Trump, and he actually has some ties with the Republican Party and President Trump. He was one of their major donors and fundraisers before he was put in this key position overseeing the U.S. Postal Service. He had actually announced some changes that would have removed processing facilities, those blue mail collection boxes that we see on every street corner in the United States, as well as making some changes to the hours of the post office and the ability of postal employees who are already overworked as it is, claiming overtime so that they can deliver all the mail on time. Once he announced those changes, many congressional Democrats said, look, this is going to be a terrible time to institute these changes because we know that the Postal Service is about to get overwhelmed by a historic amount of mail-in ballots in this upcoming November election. This is not the time to be making those changes. The fact that you're making those changes probably means that you're trying to interfere with the upcoming election and make sure that all of those mail-in ballots don't get in on time and don't get counted. Attorney generals in 20 Democratic states across the nation have already filed lawsuits against the Postmaster General, alleging that these delays, because of the removal of the processing machines and other elements of the Postal Service, have really damaged the people in their states, and they want to pursue this in tandem with all of the protests that are spreading up around the country.
I presume that the Trump administration and the Postmaster General, Mr. DeJoy, did not expect the uproar across the nation. How unprecedented is all of this, and what is Congress doing now to make sure that changes that have been detrimental to the mail service are reversed?
Right. Well, I think that a lot of Americans really haven't thought that much and in this much detail about the U.S. Postal Service before, even though it's something that people use a lot in their everyday lives, they don't really devote a lot of time and thought to how much we use it and how desperately we do need it when there are times like mail-in voting. A lot of people use it to get their medications. And of course, with the rise of online shopping and other services, a lot of people get their groceries and other important things through the mail. That's just something that's a fact of life. So when people realized that the mail was indeed slowing down, they definitely went out, started protesting. Congressional Democrats said that they were going to come back into town and push through some legislation that might give some additional funding to the U.S. Postal Service. And in the face of that uproar, the Postmaster General said that he would not be instituting any of those changes until after Election Day. Congressional Democrats said that, look, you know, obviously what we were saying made this happen, but we still need to be on guard. We still need to come back into town to make sure that that funding is passed, to make sure that this doesn't happen again and doesn't happen leading up to November.
What about concerns over these major sorting machines that made it possible for mail delivery on time? Mailboxes in specific neighborhoods that were removed. Are they also planning to address that when he appears before Congress?
He'll definitely be getting questions about where those already removed machines went to. Some early media reporting is showing that some of them may have already been destroyed, so some of the damage may already have been done. And that's why congressional Democrats want to pass that legislation to make sure that the Postal Service is funded and has funds available to try and replace some of this lost capacity. But a lot of congressional Democrats have come out and said, we all know that tampering with elements of the U.S. Postal Service is actually a federal offense. That's something that you legally cannot do in this country. And so there's possibly a severe legal issue that if these processing machines were destroyed, that's something that's going to have to be pursued in addition to those lawsuits alleging that the mail delays harmed people in those states.
Lori London talking with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. We continue on VOA Asia. One of the positive things the COVID-19 pandemic has brought is a renewed appreciation for the solid waste workers in the United States. They risk their health every day to keep our environment clean and preserve public health. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias looks at what is needed to better protect these essential workers.
The residents didn't really appreciate us in the beginning because they just thought we were trash. I mean, you bring your trash to us, but we're not trash.
The perception is changing, though, says Dinita Glenn, who has spent a long career in the solid waste industry. She now works at a Virginia transfer station, where some employees have been out because of COVID-19.
Some people have gotten sick, and they've gotten family members and household members that have been sick, and they need to be tended to.
There are more than 400,000 solid waste workers in the United States. And with a 25% increase in residential trash due to coronavirus lockdowns, they are needed more than ever.
If garbage sits on the street for even a few days, it creates a public health problem. The garbage contains pathogens, it generates liquid if it rains.
Epidemiologists say handling waste is not what puts sanitation workers at higher risk of the virus. It's actually their interactions with the community and their increased exposure time as essential workers.
A person who is infected, who is coughing, sneezing, speaking, singing, and doing any of those things can transmit respiratory droplets and even small droplets we call aerosols.
Nationwide, not all sanitation workers have had prompt access to protective gear. Republic Services, the second largest trash hauler in the nation, has seen protests over safe working conditions.
I think in the early days, folks were concerned, and they were rightly concerned because there were a lot of unknowns. We had to obviously consider social distancing, all the appropriate PPE. We're doing the sanitizing multiple times on a daily basis.
While agreeing that things are better, the Union for Republic's workers say there is still a problem with the company policy of giving employees with COVID-19 an additional 10 pay days off.
We learned out later that workers who were told to self-quarantine and tested negative were forced to use their sick days and their vacation days to compensate for this. This just encourages you to come in sick.
The union also wants Republic to be more forthcoming about the number of infected workers. Advocates for essential workers say the risk of getting sick deserves more than just thanks.
In some locations, the employers have been providing hazard pay, extra money on an hourly basis to workers. that's still the exception, not the rule in the industry.
They deserve it. I mean, just dealing with a lot of traffic on a day-to-day basis, not only are your residents, but you've got your commercial haulers as well, and sometimes it isn't very pleasant.
Pleasant or not, Glenn has kept her sense of service and humor.
The Solid Waste Management Program, we're always at your disposal. We'll never refuse you, and we talk trash every day, all day.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Virginia.
Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please take care of yourself, be kind to yourself and others, and have a great day.